Hello, listeners. I'm Allie, and this is Quad Pro Quo. As always, I'm joined by my three co-hosts, Tammy.
Hello.
Matt.
Hello there.
And Guido.
Hi.
We are in week two of 90 Sci-Fi Month.
Hell yeah.
No softballs.
No softballs, which is Matt's pick. But before we get to Matt's pick, gentlemen, you recently to a bachelor party for our dear friend Eric. How was that?
It was very nice.
We all survived.
My wife gave me $100 to pay for drinks at for lunch one day.
I did.
And then Eric's lovely fiance gave $100 to our fancy dinner the night before we left. And
it was very nice.
It was very nice, and it was very and those are the only things that we are going to talk about.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, all we could tell you is, you know, we stopped. We gave plasma. We volunteered. There was a soup kitchen down the street from our area. Airbnb. We were able to walk to the soup kitchen and volunteer our time.
To cut down on our carbon footprint.
Amazing.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow. Right.
So, yeah, you know, truly, we just wanted to give back while we were in Tampa. And we, you know, we seized every opportunity to give back to the community.
We read to some blind kids.
Wow. Such a philanthropic bachelor party.
There was a vampire, though.
Yeah, that picture you sent of the coffin in somebody's driveway incredibly concerning.
There was legitimately a real wooden coffin across the street, haphazardly placed in this man's driveway.
I think it was an upside down garden bed or something. Wooden garden bed.
Tammy, I got every angle of this box that could only be a casket. There's only one shape
a casket
could be.
The shape, I don't know why people would make a garden bed that shape. Maybe it was a casket they couldn't use. They were going to make it into a garden bed.
It was bizarre. And he said it moved.
It did move.
It did?
It was at one spot, position on the driveway one day, and then it was at a different one.
When we arrived, there was a dead bird in the front yard, and while we were unloading our luggage, some, like, neighbors were walking their dog by us, and I was like, hey, that was there when we got here, I swear. And they were like, what? Oh, God. They were pretty uncomfortable from that. But
I thought it was punishment for when we sent you a picture of the dead bird that was in our yard when we went to the Silence of the Lambs house. Oh, that was in a fountain.
It was in the fountain, yeah.
Because he sent me a picture of the dead bird. I'm like, is this just payback? Because we sent you a picture of our dead bird when we were at a house.
It wasn't a dead, it was just a downed government drone.
And you sent me a picture of another bird. It was like a weird rooster drone. Duck or something.
They had murder ducks.
They had an egret there too, right?
Yeah.
The
birds were nice. Our Airbnb was on a lake.
Mm-hmm. We saw some pelicans.
Ooh. But no.
Any gators?
No gators, right?
No, no gators.
No, there weren't any. We saw some, like, gator scales.
An armadillo?
They don't have those in Florida.
Armadillos?
When we were driving down for our honeymoon and we were driving from South Carolina to Florida, a lot of the sides of the roads, there's, like, fencing, so I guess, like, the wildlife can't, like, come onto the highways. And I saw an armadillo.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you think an armadillo would be a decent pet?
No.
No.
Like, what do you know about the armadillo?
Not much. They're weird looking.
Would you rather have a ferret or an armadillo?
A ferret.
Really?
Yeah.
At least they're fuzzy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, at least they're soft.
And they like to play.
And they're smart.
Well, how do you know the armadillo doesn't like to play?
What are they going
to
play? Roll into a ball? Like,
that's a fun game. Play bocce ball with animals.
They're weird. They're so weird looking. And I don't like that
dinosaurs.
They like have like wiry hair.
Yeah.
Like, it's
hair?
Yeah.
It's smooth on the outside.
What
no,
but
about?
Like they underneath. Like it's like, I don't know. I don't like it.
They look
it.
Like little
it's
street
like
sweeper bristles.
It's like pubic hair you find on the bathroom
yes,
sink.
Yes, it looks like pubic hair. It's
that's
like,
what the
it's,
hair reminds me of.
It's wiry Dilla pubic hair.
Didn't know
gross.
You guys were so racist against armadillos.
I don't
it's
think
fucked up.
I don't think it'd be a good animal, dude. Especially since we saw how great a ferret was in Kindergarten Cop.
That's true. The ferret.
So. You can take those on airplanes, though.
Just in your jacket pocket, it seems like.
Speaking of Kindergarten Cop, I wanted to murder a child on the plane on the way back.
Oh, yeah, you said there was a kid kicking your seat the whole way.
Yes. But it wasn't being parented, this child.
Well,
yes, it's really the parents' fault.
But
not the kid's fault.
But it was also like, I guess this parent, even though he was the child's parent.
Oh, he's a parent.
He was how I talk to your kids, knowing that I'm not their parent. So I'm trying to tell them.
Oh, you were Bateman?
Bateman? I'm being Bateman. I'm like, hey, bud. Like, he's just sitting there. He's like, hey, bud, do you mind? You really shouldn't be doing that. Because, oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, that kid's going to go far.
You can turn around and tell the kid to stop and look at the parent. Especially if it's like a 2-hour flight.
Yeah, but
and it happens multiple times. Mm-mm.
You just turn around and say, listen, I'm legally required to tell you that I'm on this airplane with you. Just so you know, I'm not a danger anymore, but, you know, 10 years ago I might have been, but, you know, I'm all good now.
But, I'm on a list, but, yeah. You know, not the no-fly list, so.
Wink, wink.
Wink, wink.
You know, I really just wanted to yeet that kid into space.
You ever heard of a ritual killing?
Just let him get sucked into the vacuum of space.
Well, speaking of that, tell us your pick for 90s sci-fi no softballs month.
Yeah, well, like I said last week, my movie came out in 1997. It had an estimated budget of $60 million, a worldwide gross of just over 26.
Oh, man. Oh, boy.
And a Rotten Tomato critics score of 35%.
All right. Wow. We got a real winner here today.
Wow.
Hey, I went to heart when you said no 90s sci-fi, no softballs. But, you know, it has a lot going for it. It's now considered like a cult classic because, after all, it was directed by Paul Anderson. Hard to believe he released this and Boogie Nights in the same year. He also, you know him. He did Phantom Thread. He did Magnolia.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He also did, Licorice Pizza. Was that new one with Philip Seymour Hoffman's kid in it?
I'm going to let you keep going with it. It's fine.
Oh, damn it.
Ice him up.
I actually wrote in my notes, Allie will call me out now.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Like clockwork.
It's not actually Paul Thomas Anderson. It's Paul W.S. Anderson, who, as Steve, who doesn't listen to the podcast, said, he's like the Thanos of terrible video game movie adaptations. He just collects video game IPs, makes terrible movie adaptations, such as Mortal Kombat, the one from 1995.
That's great.
And he's also known for basically the entire Mila Jovovich Resident Evil series.
Well, she's married to him.
And also, he directed...
She was hot.
He also Still directed is. The 90s sci-fi, no softball, Kurt Russell movie Allie Should Have Done. He did Soldier.
Ugh. Missing out.
It was also, it was written by Philip Eisner. He's literally only has 4 things on his IMDb.
Did Paul W. Sinner, did he also do the Underworld movies?
No.
No.
Did he do Sucker Punch?
No.
Because I feel like he did Sucker Punch.
No, that's Zack Snyder.
Zack Snyder.
Another,
so what? But, yeah.
Yeah, another thing W.S. Anderson did was the Death Race remake with Jason with Statham.
Jason Statham?
Joan Allen.
Jason Statham.
Jason Statham.
I can't wait to see his latest movie. Did he do that one movie that you like?
The Beekeeper?
No, but it's like the zombie. You made me watch it that one time. I didn't like it. Doomsday or something like that.
No, but that got...
That seems like something he would have done.
No, that was... Because that was a British
movie. It was
Doomsday,
wasn't it? That had the Continental GT and Beckinsale and...
Well, no, not Beckinsale. It had like a Beckinsale knockoff in it. But okay. Bob Hoskins was in it. Anderson didn't direct that. That was a 100% Brit movie.
They ate long pork in that movie, you know.
Oh,
human meat.
Pompeii. Oh, my God.
Oh, but he did do a Three Musketeers.
Yeah, that one is awful. I've seen it.
Not the one where they scream, D'Artagnan!
No, and Mila Jovovich plays the Rebecca De Mornay character from the one that I did.
Oh, Milady.
Milady de Winter. Ooh, it's so bad.
Give me more Lilu Dallas.
All right, so now it's starting with Jolie Richardson. She's known for King Ralph, The Patriot, Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, and she's definitely the better skier of the Richardson sisters.
She lives.
Too soon.
Yeah. I don't think that's...
No. Liam Neeson's going to come kick my ass.
Yeah, anyway. He should.
Rightfully so. Kathleen Quinlan, she's a quad pro quo alum from Breakdown.
Uh-huh. Starring Kurt Russell.
Starring Kurt Russell. She's also known for Apollo 13. And I just wanted, you know, so Tammy can mark her calendar. She's going to be in the upcoming Horizon in American Saga Chapter 2.
Oh, the Kevin Costner movie.
The Costner Western epic.
Her head's going to explode.
The cost is boss.
Good. Science fiction and Kevin Costner references.
Also starring Jack Noseworthy, another quad pro quo alum, again for Breakdown. He's the simple guy in the car. I seen you.
Oh, that guy. And he's
he's in the henchman, one of the henchmen.
Yeah.
He's also in Idle Hands in the Brady Bunch movie.
Yep. He is in the Brady Bunch movie.
We also have Jason Isaacs, who is known for Lucius Malfoy and his stunt dick Rufus Malfoy. Also in The Patriot and The Death of Stalin. Yes, you know, like I made the Rufus Malfoy joke because he's on the White Lotus.
He's on the most recent.
Dude hangs dong.
But it's not real. It's not his. It's
That's a stunt dick?
It's a prosthetic dick.
Dude, what is up with that shit? Look, if they're going to force me to see Twonkus, that better be the real fucking thing.
No. Because...
That's why I said it's his stunt peen, Rufus Malfoy.
Yeah, it's Rufus Malfoy. It's
also starring Sean Pertwee, who was in that Doomsday movie, Ali said. He was also known for this, that shitty, if only this movie came out in the 90s, I could have done Equilibrium, that shitty Christian Bale Matrix knockoff. You've seen it.
With Ben Foster?
No. Hmm? It's got Christian Bale and Taye Diggs.
Oh.
It's like this movie where like emotion is outlawed. So people are like taking like basically hardcore Prozac that just makes them automatons.
You should watch Equilibrium.
With the gun cutter.
We should.
You know what I'm talking about.
Great movie.
Yeah.
So
for me, he's known for just being the son of the third Doctor from Doctor Who, John Pertwee. And finally, as I mentioned last week, two juggernauts of other 90s sci-fi. We got Sam Neill, who you may know from In the Mouths of Madness.
Yes.
He is in Legend of the Guardians, the Owls of Ga'Hoole.
Okay.
And Jurassic Park 3.
Was he in Jurassic Park 1?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
But that's a good movie. So.
Jeez.
And Lawrence Fishburne, you may know him from Biker Boys, Apocalypse Now, The Matrix Revolutions, and he was motherfucking Cowboy Curtis from Pee-wee's Playhouse.
Is Apocalypse Now on the low part of his IMDb?
No, but that was one of the first ones I saw. And I was just like, oh yeah, that's right, he is in it. He was like 16.
He lied about his age.
Biker Boys?
No. Was that one of the 8 DVDs you had?
No, but I watched that a bunch too. It's like Drumline, but on bikes.
Oh my God.
So it was, what is it? What's that movie where you say it's just this, but for Drumline, or this for biker people?
Oh, 42nd Street.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay.
Showgirls is 42nd Street for strippers.
All right, so yeah, going around the room, had you seen my movie?
I don't think you actually said the name of it.
It's Event Horizon.
Okay, there we go.
300 this morning, TDRS picked up an automated navigation beacon broadcasting at 2-minute intervals in Neptune orbit.
This is incredible. It's the Event Horizon. She's come back.
Event Horizon is the culmination of a secret government project to create a spacecraft capable of faster-than-light flight. The ship doesn't really go faster than light. What it does is it creates a dimensional gateway that allows it to jump instantaneously from one point of the universe to another light years away.
Where has she been for the last 7 years, Doctor?
That's what we're here to find out.
All right, going around the room, had you seen my movie? What were your thoughts about it? Allie?
Yes, I had seen it. Yes, I was excited to watch it again.
Guido?
Yeah, I like this movie. Lots of blood and guts, and it's cool.
Yeah, because it's like horror sci-fi.
Yeah.
It's a good
niche.
I feel like I always thought it was also like a John Carpenter movie, but I think it's because I think of In the Mouth of Madness, and I think...
Yeah, they're...
Some of the gore fits.
They're very similar with like the like Sam Neill just doing crazy shit to his face.
Yeah.
So it's like interchangeable sometimes.
Yeah, he's got eyes. He doesn't have eyes.
I got it confused. Like, I was like, wait, which one's the one with the crosses all over his face? That's In the Mouths of Madness. Yeah.
Tammy, had you seen this movie before?
No.
Okay.
All right, cool. So.
She's just looking away at this.
No, I'm looking at May.
Oh, okay.
She's going to be like, what kind of frou-frou bullshit
I was seeing can I make? What I have to look forward to.
Well, I said it to Matt and I said it to Tammy when we were talking about this and how, you know, Tammy felt slighted or that you hate her. Because of your theme pick.
Which is wild.
And I said, you guys would probably feel the same way if, like, we pick... You know what my theme month's going to be? Keira Knightley movies, but only when they take place in a different century.
Oh, have come fun. On. It's not the same.
But you wouldn't like it.
I mean... How is it not the same?
How could you hate this much?
You have to pick a movie that's set in the 1800s that stars either Keira Knightley or someone else.
Like, I would rather walk into traffic.
Yeah, exactly. So,
thank you, Allie, for that incredible comparison.
Well, like if I said you had to pick a movie based off a Jane Austen novel, you would not be happy.
I'd put my best foot forward, though. And I'd try my best.
You could do Pride and Prejudice and Zombies.
I am putting my best foot forward.
And I'd be enthusiastic about it, kind of like what I did in prison movies.
There you go.
Well, we'll see.
Yeah, I would show up.
I doubt it.
So, yeah, all right.
I'm here.
Gripey gripers, I feel like. But continue.
Yeah, so the movie starts...
No one's allowed to have an opinion, but we have a podcast.
Fine, I'll pick the notebook.
About our opinions of movies.
Preempt a strike.
So I can pick Keira Knightley movies from the 1800s?
If you feel so compelled.
There are quite a few. There are at least four.
Fine. Yo, I'm going to win anyway.
When it's your fucking month, you pick the theme and we all go with it.
That's true.
I remember that.
I hope you do.
Cold.
It's going to be so blooded. Specific.
So specific.
Wait. But it's going to be so specific. And like, then a week, specific. And then a week later, she'll forget what it was.
Oh, gosh.
So then we'll just go back to medical movies.
Well, that's I have a good one picked for that. Medical right. movies starring Keira Knightley in the 1800s.
Oh, fuck.
So
yeah, I love it.
We're not having that month because they don't exist.
No, there are. I actually could probably name at least two.
Damn, Keira Knightley really fleshing out that small corner of cinema.
Yeah, she's well, very niche.
I mean, Pirates of the Caribbean takes place
Emma Stone in Yorgos Lanthimos movie.
Oh God.
We already What's the one where she gets
I wouldn't want to do that.
I know.
I'll just have my brother fill in for me then.
It's a Yorgos Lanthimos.
It's Yorgos Lanthimos.
So in 2015, we set up a permanent, in this movie, in 2015, we started up a permanent colony on the moon.
Ooh.
Then by 2032, we started terraforming Mars.
We're way behind.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that whole buying Twitter thing really set us back. And then in the year 2040, we're trying a new experimental transdimensional drive on a ship called the Event Horizon.
Ooh.
The spaceship is called the Event Horizon, but apparently it blew up and everybody died. It was the greatest tragedy in space travel in this universe. Fun fact, the Event Horizon was named after the theoretical boundary surrounding a black hole within which gravitational attraction is so great that nothing, not even radiation, can escape because of the escape velocity is greater than the speed of light.
Cool.
So light doesn't escape it either. That's the point in which light doesn't escape.
So technically, it is where the physical universe ends and physical laws no longer apply.
Ooh.
So the ship's name is symbolic for its journey beyond the borders of the known universe. We're introduced to our first character, Dr. William Weir, played by Sam Neill. He's the Event Horizon. Well, we don't actually know. We don't know what he is yet. He's just on a space station. He's having nightmares about his dead wife. She doesn't have any eyes.
Titties.
Yep. She's got some nice boobs.
He's getting called to report to the ship, the Lewis and Clark, the USAC Lewis and Clark, which is a rescue ship, which is commanded by our other big character, Captain Miller, Lawrence Fishburne.
Morpheus.
He's a good captain.
He's even sitting in a chair like on the Nebuchadnezzar in the Matrix.
Mm-hmm. The what?
The Nebuchadnezzar is his... That's his hover ship in the Matrix.
That's his ship in the Matrix.
I've only seen the Matrix one time.
Yeah. I said it looked
it's
like
not
a...
Enough.
It's
not enough times.
A chair from a roller coaster ride.
Well, yes. You said the space looked like... He told me. He's like, and now you won't be able to see it. Tammy said it looked like an IUD.
That's the Event Horizon.
Oh, yeah, the Event Horizon looked like an IUD. Okay.
Lewis and Clark just looked like a retrofitted, like, regular space, like, U.S., like NASA spaceship.
Oh, okay, basically. Okay.
The crew is scrambling with an they're trying to get ready to go on a deep space jump where they're all going to need to get into basically like crash couch Bacta tanks where like, you know, that's how they survive.
Long jump.
The long jump and also the force of this at which the ship will be traveling.
They're in goo.
It's shockproof gel because their bones will turn to dust.
Yeah, it's supposed to be up to 30 G's of force. Like Jason Isaacs explains it to him. He's like, you have to be in here or else the force will just turn your bones to dust.
He's so cute in this movie. I like him nerdy. He's nerdy in Armageddon too. Remember he's the guy scalpel. In Armageddon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Your wife will be opening your Coke bottles for you for the rest
Ketchup
of your life.
Ketchup bottles, yeah. He's so cute.
So 56 days later, the Lewis and Clark reach Neptune and somehow Dr. Weir is the first one to wake up and he's walking around, you know.
Neptune's far.
Yeah.
That's like the last planet in the solar system.
Isn't it? No, it's the second.
Well, Pluto's not a planet.
Well, no. I thought...
Don't tell Pluto that.
I thought it goes...
Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, Neptune, Pluto.
Oh, I thought...
She said Uranus.
Oh, that's right. I thought Neptune was before Uranus. I wasn't trying to be funny there.
Sure.
I could pronounce it like, you know, boring science teachers say it. I could call it Uranus.
Uranus.
So it doesn't
that's
sound...
That's what Amelia said when she came home last week and learned about space.
So girls are from Jupiter because they're more stupider?
Yeah.
What?
This is what he's teaching our daughter.
Yeah, boys go to college, of course, to get more knowledge.
Yeah, there you go.
Girls, seriously.
Girls go to Jupiter to get more stupider.
Doesn't even make any sense.
It does. Stupid. Especially when you teach it to a child that's never heard it before and it sticks.
Oh, great.
She's going to go to school and they're going to say, who taught you that? My daddy.
Just wait until the, you know, all the different diarrhea variations.
Oh, when you're climbing up a ladder and you hear something splatter, diarrhea.
So yeah, 56 days later, they get to Neptune. Dr. Weir wakes up. He's walking around in like a Kylo Ren little like kimono sort of looking thing.
He's got that box body, bro.
No shirt on. Like I said, looked just like Kylo Ren in The Last Jedi. And of course, turns out it was just another nightmare because we see his crazy, well, not as crazy.
His eyeless wife.
His eyeless, braless, dead wife.
Did not see that coming.
It's foreshadowing.
She goes, rah! And then he just wakes up. He's freaking out. Everybody's like getting, you know, they're getting out of their tanks. So they're getting acclimated to it. Because they've all done this before.
They're disoriented when they get out of the juice.
And, you know.
The juice.
The one guy, I didn't mention him in the cast. I forget who he is, but he's Cooper. He's basically the token jive jokester.
I love him.
Oh, yeah.
He's a beautiful chocolate man.
He is. He's really, and I know him from.
What does he say? He offers her coffee.
He's like, hey, you want something hot and black inside you?
Yeah, and I said yes.
He was the best part of this movie.
So yeah, so now that the crew is all getting assembled and they're all sitting there, this is basically, I'm not going to lie, this is literally a poor man's alien.
Aliens is what I got.
Boat. Both. Because they're all sitting there like, oh, why are we on this chicken shit outfit? Why are we doing this? What's going on? Why are we here? We got pulled off leave. Even Lawrence Fishburne's pissed off and he's like, well, maybe Dr. Weir here will explain it to us. We find out that the reason why they're going to Neptune is because they received a transmission from a ship none other than the Event Horizon, to which then everybody gets pissed off because they were led to believe that the Event Horizon blew up in 2040, which Dr. Weir's like, nope, that wasn't true.
Dun, dun.
Because it was working on this super secret gravitational shift dimensional drive, and it just left and now it's back. It was supposed to go to, it was intended to reach Proxima Centauri, which is another farthest outreach of the universe. Hell, it could have even have been the planet that they fucking went to in Stargate. We don't know.
Could have been.
They don't say the name of the planet. They just say it's in the Kemian galaxy.
I know.
It was out there.
It was supposed to go there, but subsequently vanished without a trace. And now the Lewis and Clark is supposed to go and see if they can save. And then they're like, well, wait, what was so special about this ship? And Dr. Weir is explaining about the trans-dimensional gravitational drive. I feel like Philip Eisner just used a lot of big words just to sound smart here.
Well,
but it's sci-fi, you know. That's why they're all sitting there smoking, because of the whatchamajigged.
Thank goodness they invented the whatchamajig thing.
Yeah, and also, you know, the thing that invented gravity, you know, artificial gravity in spaceships.
They got CO2 scrubbers, dude. Okay?
So
everyone's smoking because it sucks. Space sucks.
The way that the Event Horizon ship works is it's going to cut a dimensional hole in space. So say if you want to, and he explains it by damaging one of John Pertwee's nudie men. He basically says it folds space so you can go from one point to another point that are on opposite sides of the universe.
I did like this explanation.
You liked him placing a pen through a folded piece of paper to illustrate a wormhole?
Not maybe that piece of paper. I thought that was rude.
This scene has now become paraphrased in other movies that use this sort of technology. Like, it's said that they use this scene in Interstellar.
I wouldn't know.
Oh, yeah, you haven't seen that.
That's another sci-fi movie, Tammy.
They used it in Stargate. Oh, no, they didn't.
No, he drew on a whiteboard.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then also, it's also was used in the latest Thor movie, so maybe you two saw that.
Mm-hmm.
But then also, because he plays the transmission for them, and
it's really scary sounding. Yeah,
honestly, if I heard that, I wouldn't have gone. I'd be like, nope, fuck that. Let it stay at Neptune.
It was just mutilated bodies and people screaming and Latin blood hitting the floor.
This is the equivalent of don't read from the book. Mm-hmm. Like, they let's also, just not do it.
They also did like that like life scan of the rooms and they did see some sort of life, but it didn't pick it up.
Yeah.
So you're like, what could that be?
Yeah, like Jolie Richardson scans the ship for possible life because they're like, oh, well, hopefully maybe the crew is still alive. That's why, because even though, despite the fact that it's the whole,
yeah, it sounds horrid.
And just everybody screaming, they're like, oh, well, maybe there's a chance. you know, just like in other horror movies, seven people were murdered in this house. Well,
probably won't happen to us.
It won't happen to us. Let's just move in.
Let's buy it.
Yep. They do a flyby around the ship. They don't see anything from outside, of course. They decide they're going to take a boarding party on, but they also realize that there's like no atmosphere and no gravity in the ship. So they got to put on their little space suits with their mag boots.
It's a party. They got little hats on.
They're going to send three people in.
Do they really have mag boots?
Yeah, magnetic boots.
Okay. Because the gravity's not on yet, Tammy.
Are they the same ones from Face Off?
No, those were from the Super Mario movie.
Oh, darn it.
Which is on my list.
Oh, God.
What's going to happen is they're going to split up.
Always a good idea. Yeah,
of course.
Movie.
Yeah, why not? Kathleen Quinlan.
But they really split up too. They literally go. They're not working in pairs. They are literally singulars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Lawrence.
Such a bad idea.
For some reason, Lawrence Fishburne, he goes to the med bay, even though he's not a medic. He's not a doctor.
Yeah.
The doctor goes to the bridge. Claire?
The bridge.
And then little Ensign, you know, little red shirt Jimmy, he goes to where the reactor is.
Right. Mm-hmm. Just which really bad.
Makes no sense.
Maybe they were just exploring.
Yeah, they're
they should stay together.
Yeah, you know, the let's split up gang, it only works when you either got a hot little brunette or a redhead with you, or a dog that likes to eat sandwiches.
That's the only time it works. Yeah.
Lawrence Fishburne, he's walking around, and he gets freaked out by a hand that just floats by him, like a severed hand.
Just like Jurassic Park.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And Kathleen Quinlan, she goes up to the bridge, and she sees a giant floating eyeless body that's like cut to shit, and she freaks out.
And let's continue. I mean, why not? Why not just keep walking around this fucking ghost ship? Just
frozen, mutilated body parts.
Yeah, there's like gore and viscera, like just
coating the walls. It looks like there was a rapid depressurization of where they were, just like turned someone into frozen strawberry jam.
Meanwhile, engineer Justin, he enters, like I said, he enters the ship's gravity core, which consists of a giant metal orb. Gyroscopes were like big in the 90s.
It's a BDSM torture chamber.
Yeah.
Dude.
Again, it's just giving me like Hellraiser vibes.
Yeah.
Why are there spikes on the... You know, honestly, I've seen a lot of sci-fi movies. You've seen a lot of sci-fi movies.
Brag.
This is the only one that looks like all surfaces could harm you.
The tunnel looked like a meat grinder.
Yeah.
The one character said.
Yeah.
It did kind of look like a meat grinder.
Yes. Justin called it a meat grinder, which, fun fact, among those in the audience in 97 watching this movie was screenwriter Robert Gordon, who wrote somebody's potential pick for this month. He wrote Galaxy Quest.
Ooh.
And was amused enough by the notion of the meat grinder tunnel that in his movie he created the infamous corridor filled with chompers.
So. Thank you for that segue into next week.
It also kind of reminded me of in Labyrinth when they're stuck down in like the oubliette and like that thing comes down the tunnel and it's like a big, it looks like a meat grinder and there's two little dudes wheeling it.
So while he's in there, for some reason, somehow the orb activates, like it turns on.
Palpatine.
And it starts spinning around, and then a portal opens, much like in last week's episode.
Oh, they dialed it up.
Yeah, space hole.
But Justin then goes up and does the same thing James Spader does, you know, puts his hand through it, he's just playing with it,
very uncontrolled though.
Yeah,
they didn't know.
But then he gets pulled in and like starts freaking out. And meanwhile, the crew, Dr. Weir, you know, Sam Neill, Jolie Richardson, and John Pertwee are all sitting on their ship watching this. And his camera on his ship, on his helmet, like just went all staticky.
Plus they're like monitoring their vitals.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And he just like flatlined. So once he gets sucked through this portal, that's when all the shit goes wrong. Because like everything starts blowing up. Like all their, like something happens, it causes their, like some sort of pulse creates their ship. Causes the Lewis and Clark to just start blowing up, and all the gas is getting, like there was a fracture in the hull is what they said, and everything's getting sucked out into space. Luckily, the people that are on the Event Horizon are able to restore the gravity and the atmosphere on that ship, and they're like, okay, Lawrence Fishburne's like, okay, everybody on the Event Horizon. John Pertwee's like, fuck that, I'd rather die on here. And they're like, nope, everybody's on the Event Horizon. They find out now they only have 20 hours of usable oxygen left, and there's no radio radio source to call for help. And meanwhile, Justin gets pulled out of
the goo.
Out of the goo by Cooper, because Cooper's job, I guess, is he sits in the room where everybody's tethered to the inside of the Lewis and Clark.
Yeah.
And he just he runs with his spacesuit on and just runs out to go and along the line.
Pulls on the umbilical cord.
Yes.
Yes.
Because when he gets sucked into the goo, the line goes.
So taut, and then it starts ripping out of the
water. Yeah, it's like when you catch a fish.
Yeah.
It's like in Poltergeist.
Yeah, like in Poltergeist. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So head towards the light, Caroline.
When they put the rope in.
And they pull out that pink mm-hmm. goo.
Yeah.
They save Justin, but he's now like completely catatonic in a vegetative state and saying like what he saw and what they saw. Dr. Weir's just shrugging it off like, no, you guys are just delusional. There's no way that this thing could have turned on by itself. That's not possible.
There's a lot of language in this movie. I was just noticing, like, especially at this part, he's just like, it's every other word is fine.
They are rolling around in their B moviness.
Yeah.
Yeah. Paul W.S. Anderson, he really wanted to do a rated R movie after his first big hit, which was the 95 Mortal Kombat.
Nice.
So good.
And he was like, so he's just reveling in being able to do a hard R movie. Cool. And this was hard R. It was initially
NC. There's boobs in it.
There's tits.
It was initially NC-17, and they had to cut down and cut out a lot of stuff. Well, I mean, with the blood and the gore and the tits.
And the cursing.
And the dude that's on fire.
Oh, yeah. Wait, do you see his dong? Is it like a fiery dong?
Potentially, no, not a dick fire.
Yeah, I could have sworn you saw Sam Neill's later at the end. So they go to inspect the gravity drive, Dr. Weir and Lawrence Fishburne, or Captain Miller, I'm sorry. Sam Neill, Lawrence Fishburne.
Interchangeable.
And Sam Neill goes into a really big air duct. Well, it's an air duct, but it's just covered it's covered in circuitry. It's just like a large circuit board.
It's the access room for the you know, the electronics.
It's a
which
lot
also
like,
glow green.
It's a lot like the scene in 2001 when they go to shut off Hal. It's like that. I forget. Did you see that?
No, I've never really seen 2001. You know well, how you, I feel about Stanley Kubrick.
You've seen it.
Yeah, I have.
Yeah, so like
and
he's doing the same thing where he's like trying and he finds the one circuit board that doesn't appear to be working
pretty quickly, mind you.
And then
there's a lot of them in there.
He's trying to fix it and the lights like flicker out again, and who visits him? Dead naked wife.
Do you think that
he McNo eyes?
He didn't put his dick in there, did he?
Well, in his dead wife?
Well, the eyes, the eyeball, you know,
in the eyeball.
Well, I mean it's a
I don't
hole.
Think he could,
like, when you have a hammer everything's a nail, you
any
know what
hole
I mean?
Is the goal.
Well, what? I was just saying, like, no, maybe he had, could, like,
dude, he couldn't because she was a ghost.
Yeah, she's not real.
It's not
that's
like
not a, what she looked like back at home for any amount of time.
She had eyes when she was alive.
Was she on the Event Horizon?
No. I used to think she was, but she wasn't.
Okay.
So I'm just like, it's because he was so busy with his work on the Event Horizon, he was neglecting his wife, and then she, you know, 86ers herself.
So when does he skull fuck her?
Oh my
Never.
God.
So they're in there, and then Captain Miller says that this area is off limits. I don't want anybody in here anymore. But the damage is already done. Sam Neill's already, like, infected with whatever sort of spirit is in this.
The damage is done as soon as they were like, let's go look.
Meanwhile, Kathleen Quinlan is in medical trying to go over the ship's logs, and she's also keeping an eye on Justin because he's just laying there just, and and she then hears something. She looks over and she sees a tent, like a medical tent over one of the exam beds. She opens it up and it's her kid.
What?
Yeah, and his legs are all chopped up.
His legs are all, like, diseased and mutilated.
Oh, that's terrible.
And she's like, whoa! They also uncover some, footage of the old crew. They're all sitting there. They're having a good time. They're about to go off on their launch. Captain says something in Latin, so we're like, hey, that's the guy that said the thing in the transmission.
In nomine patri. Scary voice memo.
E pluribus unum.
But they're trying to clean it up because then, like, a bunch of other footage happens, but it's indecipherable. They can't really see what it is. And now everybody's getting affected by visions. Lawrence Fishburne sees one of a dude on fire. He's like, why you let me burn? And apparently...
Was it Gabriel Byrne?
No, it wasn't Gabriel Byrne, unfortunately.
That's too bad.
They're all sitting there. They're trying to talk and like, man, something is wrong with this ship. Something is fucking wrong. And of course...
It's alive!
And of course, Sam Neill's just like, no, you're all just fucking stupid. You're all fucking crazy.
He is gaslighting them quite a bit in this movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, that's his baby they're talking about.
It's just too complicated. he built to the explain ship. To you.
Yes, he's doing that. He's, like, you guys, he is doing the. Understand. You wouldn't. Oh, you must not have gotten it. Like, he's that guy.
But he tried to explain it once, and they were like, me. Do you speak English? So, you know, it's their own damn fault.
John Pertwee has had enough, and he's like, no, this is your fucking fault. You built this fucking ship that did what it was supposed to do, brought something back.
This is, I don't know if you're familiar with Warhammer 40K, but this is exactly how they get from A to B in that whole story or universe. So in order to get from one planet to another, they rip a hole in space-time and literally travel through hell.
A popular fan theory states that Event Horizon is set in the same universe as the popular tabletop game Warhammer 40K. Screenwriter Philip Eisner was an avid player of Warhammer and revealed in 2017 that the game was a major influence on Event Horizon.
Holy shit!
Well, there you go. Holy fucking shit.
The theory states that Event Horizon is a prequel to the setting of Warhammer because of the similarities between Event Horizon's depiction of hell and the macabre alternate dimension, the Warp, in Warhammer 40K.
They're going to remake this movie and Henry Cavill's going to be in it.
How about that?
Ships that access the warp for faster and light travel will get infested with warp entities such as daemons and enslavers unless they are protected by a Geller field, which could explain what happened to the Event Horizon.
They had no Geller field.
Okay. Blood for the blood god.
Skulls for the skull throne.
And now Lawrence Fishburne tells John Pertwee that, you know what, yeah, you get back over on the Lewis and Clark with Cooper and you try and get this thing fixed, because as soon as you get that ship fixed, we are getting the fuck out of here. And Sam Neill is like, we can't do that. And he's like, oh, well, I'm not just going to leave it. What do you mean? I'm going to blow it the fuck up.
We're going to nuke it for Morbid.
To which then Sam Neill's
Exterminatus.
Like, Sam Neill's like, no!
No! Why is Sam Neill like that?
Because his physical movements can only be described as
he's very over dramatic, and
he is, yeah, I guess.
In this movie, he's really hamming it up.
Like, everybody's going around, going their separate ways. Peters is back in medical and discovers that Justin has awoken from his coma and he disappeared.
Good riddance.
They find him. He's in the airlock and he's not wearing a space suit.
This is where the movie declines for me.
It's not a credit card, Tammy. Yeah.
It was good. I will say it is the same
until now.
You know, the same thing I say every time we watch Aliens, where I'm like, she's holding on with an elbow, and you're telling me she's not getting sucked out to the great suction of space.
She's got great elbows.
Apparently.
The greatest. You don't think so?
Never skip elbow day.
Sigourney Weaver is just so strong.
I mean, she is.
She's badass.
And she was also being powered by a mother's love in that movie.
Get away from her, you bitch!
But you said that with so much passion behind your face.
Well, that's what she says.
She said that.
But in Alien Resurrection, a hole about this big in the hull of the ship causes the alien to be sucked out.
It was wild.
Inside out. But Sigourney Weaver's elbow is real strong.
I remember that.
The power of
love.
That,
was that four?
That's Alien, yeah, four, Alien Resurrection. Yeah,
that was
awesome. I know, it's good.
So he's in the airlock. He started the sequence to get the airlock to get yeeted into space. He's had enough. He's like, if you've seen the shit that I saw, because apparently in the interdimension, like, hellscape that he was in, time is different there. So he was only in there for like 2 minutes, but it said that he could have been there for like hundreds of years.
Basically. Oh, that's horrifying.
Yeah. And while that's happening, something is slamming on the door banging really loud on the door, and they're trying, and Sam Neill wants to go open it, but they're like, no, don't open it. So just as the airlock door opens, Lawrence Fishburne was out in space trying to help fix the ship. He scoots down, is able to, just as Justin is outside, tackles him back into the airlock.
They tell him to curl up into a ball, because that's going to help.
Because and push all the air out of your lungs.
He was like basically in a trance when he set off.
Right, and then he comes to and he's like, I don't want to die.
What? You're supposed to...
Mommy!
Trying to put all of the body heat to the middle if he's in a ball.
I think it's also that like
your extremities are close to your body.
Oh, I kind of thought it was because if he was spread out, he would move faster, so they wouldn't be able to pile into him. But if you're in a ball, you're going to like roll, sort of. I don't know.
No, I thought it was because of the body temperature. Like, you want to keep your core warm, and
yeah,
your fingers and toes will be frostbitten first if they're not not near your core.
Well, I guess that makes sense, yeah.
Science. So they're able to get him back into the ship. He's all cut up now because his like veins almost burst out of his body
yeah.
in the vacuum of space. So they just put him in a crash tube and just...
Is he dead?
No.
No, he's alive.
In a tube of goo.
In a goob too. Tube. Goob. Goo tube.
Everybody's still trying to question Weir about what's going... Sam Neill with what's going on with the ship. So Miller then goes and talks to Jason Isaacs, or DJ, and he's explaining to him about his vision that he saw about the Burning Man. It's this guy that, like, when he was starting out in his career, the guy, something caught fire, and he left him to die. Because it was either save yourself or you both die. So, meanwhile, Jason Isaacs has now been like, oh, shit, well, just so you know, I was able to... fix more of that transmission. It didn't really translate to say save me. It said save yourself from hell.
Oh.
So yeah, something is...
Both of our movies have poor translation in them.
Well,
you need a James Spader in this movie too.
That's right. Maybe. Or even, shit.
Richard
Kind could have translated the Latin better.
Can you imagine him in this movie?
Ah,
the Event Horizon.
The Event Horizon.
The cartouche.
Somebody shot a hole in the cartouche.
Cooper now calls in and says that the repairs on the Lewis and Clark are almost finished. They're just doing some preliminary stuff now. And they're like, yep, we should be able to get out of here now. And then again, Lawrence Fishburne's like, yep, remember, I said I'm going to blow this fucking ship up once we get out of here. And Weir protests. Then there's like another power drain. They want everybody to get off the ship immediately. And Weir's like, I'm not going anywhere. He's like, no, we're going home. No.
No.
This is my home.
Creepy.
Yeah,
he almost whispers this.
Yeah, he's gone full crazy. The ship is now...
He's on the turpentine.
Yeah, they got to him. What they also need to now collect CO2 scrubbers that, you know, Guido was talking about earlier, allows them to smoke in space. And just as Quinlan grabs the final one, who does she see? She sees her ghost kid running around again, which makes no sense because apparently the kid's in a wheelchair. So she should know that she's seeing things. But what does she do? She goes after ghost kid, goes up a ladder, and sees him across a hallway, and she runs towards him only to find out that there is a giant hole between where the kid is standing and where she was running.
Would you guys go after Ghost Kid?
No.
No?
If you knew for a fact that there's no way in hell that your kid is here.
No, I'm like, I'm seeing shit. We didn't take my kid with me.
As she falls down into the hole, she just goes bleh and bleh, bleh and bleh and hits a bunch of shit, falls down into the gravity core room, and is dead.
She explodes with blood.
Like a big old,
with blood.
A big old meat sack.
Ew.
Sick.
Back on the Lewis and Clark, John Pertwee hears a noise and sees Dr. Weir run by. And he's running back onto the Event Horizon. And he's like, oh shit, what's going on? And Lawrence Fishburne's then calling in, is just like, Weir did something. I think he took one of the explosives on the ship, on the Event Horizon, and smuggled it onto the Lewis and Clark. Be careful. And of course, just as he gets that message, Pertwee finds the bomb. It has less than 5 seconds, and it goes off and blows up the Lewis and Clark.
Bye-bye, Dr. Husson.
Bye-bye, Sean Pertwee.
Have you ever seen fire in zero-G?
And
it's beautiful.
Meanwhile, Cooper is out on the... He's out on the ship on the outside as it blows up, and then he's just flying away. He's like, what the fuck is... Like, again, he's just the jive guy. Has to say all the jive jokes as he's...
It's the most unbelievable part of the movie, though.
Or does he just, like, get yeeted out into space?
Yeah, he's just like, oh, what the fuck is that? That's why is this...
Huge fear.
He's like, why is this shit always happening to me? Miller then contacts Jason Isaacs and tells him that the ship is destroyed and Cooper and Smitty are presumed dead. He also orders Jason Isaacs, if he sees Sam Neill, to just kill him. But Sam Neill gets the drop on Jason Isaacs, and Lawrence Fishburne's on his way to find Jason Isaacs. He comes in only to see that Sam Neill has literally eviscerated him like what they did to that one guy in Midsommar. Like, he's just strung up and spread out, like
splayed.
Oh, it's a blind eagle. It's gruesome.
It puts him in your temple.
It's gruesome, yeah.
Yeah, it was really gross. And he grabs the portable nail gun from the ship, and he's going to find Sam Neill now.
And nail gun him to death?
Well, he's going to shoot him with it.
Nice.
Space bolts.
He's going to nail him.
Whoa.
He go goes in to see that Sam Neill sitting in the captain's seat, and he has mutilated his own face. He's ripped out his eyes.
For fun.
He's ripped out his eyes and then stapled his eyelids shut.
Gross. With well, he doesn't want
to. And then he makes a Back to the Future reference. Eyes? We don't need eyes where we're going.
Where we're going, we don't need eyes.
He was also probably worried that someone would skull fuck him. So that's right. He had to, like, you know.
That is right, because he's not a ghost.
So he was able to sew them up to keep the peepees out of his eye sockets.
Yeah, to keep the peepees out of the eye sockets.
Yeah, you gotta be careful with the space peepees in the eye sockets.
No, the space creature from Stargate, Ra.
Ra?
He actually jarred them and is saving them.
Ooh.
To
like in those
put
jars.
Together his body
the
later.
Copic jars?
Yes.
The disdain you pronounce raw with is raw. Just, it keeps me warm.
The Canubic jars.
The Canubic jars, yes.
Canoptic.
So then, but then it's just amazing how people just disappear and reappear in the cast in this movie. Because
where's Julie Richardson?
Yeah.
Haven't seen her.
Yeah.
She showed up.
She fucked
she
off.
Fainted on, or she was conked out on the ground.
Yeah. Speak and she will appear. Yeah. She tried to get the jump on Sam Neill, but even though his eyes are stapled shut now, he's able to just throw her off.
It's funny because they didn't know what to do with that character. It's like, no, you pass out on the floor for a while until we need you. Just
till the end.
We'll be back.
Then you can come back.
We need you to survive. So just be unconscious.
We need
somewhere.
A final girl.
You see all the spikes on these walls? Just stay put.
And then Sam Neill now has the nail gun, and he's just pointing it at both of them to keep them away as he activates the ship's gravity core, because he wants to go where the ship has been and he wants to take them with them.
They're gonna have some fun.
Yeah.
Why does he care?
Because he's into murder
dead
porn.
Or alive.
Well, no, because he's basically now possessed by the ship. And the ship is this weird interdimensional presence that wants
evil.
To mutilate and torture.
Yeah, I think it feeds off of fear.
It feeds
and
off of pain. And,
pain and suffering.
One thing.
It is very Hellraiser-y.
It's also, when you think about it, it's very Lovecraftian.
Yeah.
So Cooper was able to pull a Matt Damon from The Martian, most of the oxygen in his spacesuit, to shoot him back towards the event horizon, and he goes and bumps into the window, which startles Sam Neill. He shoots at it, trying to shoot Lawrence Fishburne, who can dodge it, but shoots into the window, which then causes the window of the cabin to explode, and now everybody's...
And so did Tammy.
Explosive decompression.
Is this when you
freaked
out?
Yeah.
And she just how is there 20 hours of air in there? All that air is gone. Why does it take so long to decompress?
Yes.
No, I didn't say that.
Yeah.
No.
That was your hang-up.
No. It wasn't...
20 hours? No, I didn't say anything about timing.
And you also weren't as subtle. You were yelling.
You were yelling.
I'm surprised...
She was activated.
I'm surprised Allie didn't hear you next door.
You're such...
Fuck this movie. It makes no sense. Why does it take so long to fly out of a fucking spaceship? How are they this strong? That person's strong, but this woman is stronger?
And then, of course, there was Steve just egging her on.
Oh, I'm sure Steve loved it.
Yeah, you're totally right. It doesn't make any sense to me.
When Steve says, yeah, you're totally right, you know that he's not telling the truth.
Goodness.
I don't care, because someone's telling me that I'm right. And then they keep talking about the air exchange in the smaller container.
Yeah.
From, what was that guy's name? Joey?
Justin.
Justin. I was like, well, why did Justin almost explode? But then the other people, when the window broke, they didn't. And they're telling me it's about pressure in small spaces.
I just think it's science fiction, so they're just making it up as they go along.
But the point is, in a story...
Tammy doesn't understand physics.
If you're gonna make up the rules... And you have to follow
your
rules.
And you have to follow
rules.
The rules.
Yes, it takes less time to decompress an airlock than an entire spaceship. I'm sorry you don't get that.
But also, the whole thing is that the great pressure of space, it doesn't matter if it's a ballroom or a room this size. The pressure of space will literally suck something inside out. It doesn't matter.
It takes time.
It doesn't take time.
Depending on how much... It does. It's not instantaneous.
It is.
It is a movie.
The pressure
also.
Of space would cause it to literally like that.
Sam Neill does get sucked out into space. Now the whole plan is to just blow up the bridge between the gravity well and the rest of the ship, because then they can use the front of the ship as a lifeboat. Then they're just going to potentially just coast into recognizable space and somebody will rescue them, kind of like in Alien and Aliens.
Activate the beacon.
Everybody can breathe also.
I know.
Everyone can breathe.
Well, they got the CO2 scrubbers.
Even though the glass has been broken.
It was shut by a blast door.
The door to the room, and that's how spaceships work.
After everybody had to move into that room because the glass of the window was broken.
They moved to a different ship. They moved back to the one they showed up on.
I know. Okay. I know.
That ship was blown up.
That ship was blown up. So it's a different part of the ship.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
They go down to the medical bridge.
Oh, they're in the medical bridge.
They were on the command bridge.
It wasn't up in the medical bay of a spaceship.
That's where the drugs are.
And the weapons.
I feel like that's where everything happens. Happens in Aliens, too. They end up in the medical bay.
So Cooper and Stark stay in the medical bay. They want to prep themselves to get into the bridge while Lawrence Fishburne is going to go and blow up the gravity core. He's now also being attacked by the burning visage of his former shipmate, who shoots fire at him. And then he gets into the gravity core, and he's just about to blow everything up in the last 2 minutes of before they get shot into the next dimension. And Miller sees his burned guy again, who then turns into Dr. Weir, but he's all like cut up and looking like, you know, marked by everything. And he even has his eyes back. You potentially even see his dick. I forgot.
Demon Twonkus.
Mm-hmm. Oh, beggars can't be
choosers. He does look scary.
The ship brought him back and she won't let anyone leave. Everyone will have to come to this unimaginable place in which Miller calls hell. But Weir responds that it is much, much worse than the idea of hell and shows him the images of all the crew of the Lewis and Clark being mutilated and like tortured, like just flung around and carved up and cut and everything.
Sick.
And Miller offers his life in exchange for the others, but Weir says there is no escape. Everyone has to come. As the gateway is opening, Miller makes
space come.
As Miller makes one final desperate reach to the detonator, but he keeps getting these horrible images projected into his head, and Miller sacrifices himself by landing onto the detonator, hitting it, and blows up the gravity core. Bye-bye, Lawrence Fishburne and Sam Neill.
Aww.
Stark and Coop watch helplessly from a distance, because remember, there was that long corridor, you know, that gave the Event Horizon its IUD shape.
Uh-huh.
And then they get in crash couches, and they, like I said, they're just going to float and hopefully somebody picks them up, which eventually someone does. A rescue crew finds them. And just as she's out, she's like, where is everybody? Everybody. And then he hears the rescue guy's like, oh, everyone's here. Everyone's with us. Takes his mask off and it's fucking Sam Neill, like all cut up again. Like one final, you know, jump scare.
So is it that she's in a dream?
Yeah, it was like when Sam Neill woke up first. And he had a night. He was in a nightmare.
Or is it just a continual?
I mean, we don't know because
one flight crew picks them up. Then that flight crew dies. One flight crew picks them up. Then that flight. Like what? It's just a continuous circle of.
But I mean, they
getting picked up and everyone dying.
They can't now because the gravity core where the creature or being was has been destroyed.
We think that.
That is true. But yeah, we don't know. But she's just inconsolable because like she's freaking out. Cooper's hugging him. Her and like the real rescue crew is there, presumably. So that was the end of the movie. Some more fun facts. Having just done a PG-13 movie, Mortal Kombat, Anderson was really wanting to do something more mature and gruesome. This is why he turned down the chance to direct X-Men to do this movie. He also turned down the opportunity to direct the X-Files movie and Alien Resurrection.
Whew! The trifecta right there.
Although the film was mostly met with negative reviews and disappointing box office result at the time of its release, it's become a considerable like cult classic.
Aha!
Yeah, it is.
Anderson said that the film's cult status was predicted to him years before by Kurt Russell.
What?
When they were...
It's a circle, just like the Stargate.
Anderson screened Event Horizon before they started work on Soldier together, and Russell said, hey, forget about what that movie's doing. doing now. In 15 years time, this is gonna be the movie you're glad you made.
Well, I mean, Kurt knows, man. I mean, he's like the king of cult classics at this point. Like, his movies become cult classics.
I still watch Captain Ron.
Still great.
They also were, one studio executive inquired whether this movie could be PG-13, and he said no. And then its initial screening, the MPAA gave it an NC-17 rating, to which then they had to cut it down to a
shit ton out rated of it, yeah. R. Yeah. And it's still a pretty violent movie.
Yeah, like, it's gruesome.
It's sci-fi, but I think people consider it more horror at this point. It's scary.
So I definitely jumped a couple times.
Yeah, the jump scares are a lot with the eyes and the titties.
Great gore.
There is good gore.
It gives good gore, dude.
So yeah, going around the room, pass, fail. We'll start with Guido.
Pass. I like this movie a lot. And, you know, growing up, it was always like, it was much scarier when I was younger. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it was, my dad would say, no, that's a capital R. You can't watch that
one. It's a hard, like, R.
Hard, yeah, R.
Hard R, capital R, you know. And that was his way of saying, I will let you watch some R-rated movies. This one, no. I think it did a really good job of depicting some hellish nightmares, you know. It's, at least, you know, every time I close my eyes, that's what I see. Mm-hmm. I liked it a lot. Pass.
Allie?
Pass. I tend to think of it more as horror, even though I know it's sci-fi horror, but like, it is just really scary. And I just always remember it being on lists of like really disturbing. And I do get a lot of like Hellraiser from it. I don't understand the space stuff, so like bending space is, I have no idea. But I like Sam Neill, and yeah, I think it's good. I think it's scary.
Cool.
Yeah.
Tammy?
No, thanks.
Okay.
Why didn't you like this one? Never mind.
I think we heard. Did you think it was scary?
Yeah. I liked that part of it.
The scary part.
The scary part.
Yeah.
I just didn't like the way that it was tied up at the end.
Yeah.
And I also did not like that they lived.
Oh, like there was a survivor.
Yeah.
But I see. I think that's, to be honest, I think this movie is incredibly open to interpretation as to how it ends, because there are so many like dreams and sequences and things like that where it's like, I personally think that she's just stuck in a continuous level of hell at the end. Like, I don't think she survives. I think she's stuck in an event horizon.
So
it's just her reliving it every mm-hmm. forever. Like that's what I.
So how he
but
woke
even
up
in reality, that could be what her reality is. Too,
yeah,
exactly. So she's never going to leave the.
It's all open. Yeah, that's the thing.
Or like how when he woke up before everyone else at one time, that was his initial point of being.
Yeah.
Under the influence of this evil entity, and then now it's passed on to her.
Yeah,
it follows. Yeah. Right,
it's a lot. It's very mm-hmm. you can kind of think what you want to think, I guess. Yeah,
he had never been there though, whereas
right,
but everything's very untrustworthy.
Yeah,
like he's an untrustworthy narrator, so we don't know if what we're seeing, like when he wakes up and he has that dream of his, like, you know, eyeless wife, if he's stuck in like some sort of loop, like time loop or something like that. Or like, I kind of always.
So he was already possessed.
Yeah, he was already possessed. And yeah. He was the one that sent out the distress call to lure the Lewis and Clark to the event horizon. You know? Like, and he's the continuous, like that sort of something like that. Like there's just, like there's so much you could like mm-hmm. decide this is how you want the movie to be. So it's just very like open. I'm sure if you asked the director, he's like, no, the ending's just the ending.
Like a John Carpenter response?
Yeah. A John Carpenter. Be like, that's cool, but I didn't think of that, so no.
It's just some guys in Antarctica doing a job.
Yeah.
Don't think too much. Touch grass.
Touch grass, kids.
Let's continue with Guido Appreciation Month. Next week is Tammy's pick. Tammy, what do you got for us? Quid pro quo.
So my movie is Galaxy Quest.
Tim Allen.
It came out in 99. It cost $45 million to make, and it only made $7 million on the opening weekend in the United States.
So definitely
and
qualifies.
You can watch it. It's on Pluto, or you can rent or buy it.
Wonderful.
If you like Sigourney Weaver.
I love Sigourney
Tim Allen,
Weaver.
Alan Rickman.
We are at Quad Pro Quo Pod across Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd. You can suggest a theme month on our website or via social media. And please rate and review us wherever you listen to podcasts. And until next week, thank you for listening.
Bye.
Goodbye.